Ekatra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, if you've been following, well, pretty much anything online or in the news, this whole issue of free speech versus harmful speech, it's just everywhere. It's incredibly fraught.
It really is. What? And it's confusing.
Absolutely. So today, we're diving into what feels like a really definitive guide on it. Caitlin Ring Carlson's book, Hate Speech, Free Expression and Harmful Communication.
Yeah, and this couldn't be more relevant for you listening right now. Mm-hmm. We're all trying to figure this out, you know. We cherish free expression, especially, say, the U.S. First Amendment idea.
Right.
But at the same time, we're just swimming in this stuff, this hateful expression, particularly online, and we see the harm it does. Real harm.
And the debate often gets boiled down to these extremes, doesn't it? It's either, oh, absolute free speech, anything goes, or we need total censorship.
Exactly. That false binary.
So Carlson's book. And our goal here today is really to push you past that simplistic view. We want to give you a more nuanced way to think about it, based on evidence. Looking at the content, sure, but also the context, the technology, and the actual consequences.
It's like a shortcut to getting properly informed on something super critical without just getting bogged down in the usual political shouting matches.
Okay, so who is Caitlin Ring Carlson? Why is she the right guide for this?
Well, she's a professor of communication studies at Seattle University. Her whole area is media law and digital communication. So she's been looking at exactly this intersection for years, how technology is changing speech and social harm.
What makes her perspective really stand out, though?
I think it's her interdisciplinary approach. Mm. That's key. She's not just looking at it through a legal lens, you know, citing old court cases.
Uh-huh.
And she's not just looking at it sociologically. She blends constitutional law, sociology, psychology, and technology ethics.
Ah, okay. So she brings all those pieces together.
Exactly. Her starting point is basically that you can't understand hate speech today, the way it spreads through algorithms and at this massive scale, just by reading old legal texts. The context has fundamentally shifted.
Right, because she's so focused on the 21st century, on digital media, she really forces us to look at how things like algorithmic amplification and platform governance, or the lack thereof, sometimes have changed the nature of the problem.
Yeah, she argues pretty convincingly, I think, that our old frameworks just aren't up to the task anymore. They were built for a totally different world.
So does she offer, like, a silver bullet solution?
Not really, no. And that's actually one of the strengths. It's not about finding one single policy. It's more about providing a framework, a way to think critically about it, depending on the specific situation.
Okay, let's unpack the main argument then. You mentioned it rejects those extremes.
Right. Her central thesis is that these simple binary approaches, total protection versus total restriction, they just fail.
Yeah.
They always fail because hate speech isn't static. It's dynamic. It really depends on the circumstances.
So what does she propose instead?
She argues that any effective response has to be multifaceted. It needs a nuanced understanding that looks at four main things: the context, the speaker's intent, the impact on the target and society, and the technology being used.
You can't just have one rule for everything.
Exactly. You can't. So the book kind of takes you on this journey. First, it tackles the definition problem, what even is hate speech. It's actually really slippery legally and socially.
Mm-hmm.
Then it makes this crucial comparison between the American model, which is frankly an international outlier in how much speech it protects,
okay,
and what she calls the international model, which tends to put more weight on things like human dignity and social harmony.
And then crucially, she grounds it all on the harm.
Yes, the tangible, measurable harms. She really pushes back hard against that old sticks and stones idea. Mm-hmm. This isn't about people just being offended. It's about documented psychological damage, social damage, even democratic damage.
Okay, let's dig into that. Starting with the foundations, you said defining it as a quagmire.
Yeah, that's Carlson's term. She stresses that in the U.S., hate speech isn't a formal legal category like, say, incitement or defamation or true threats. It's more of a social and political term.
So the courts don't have a specific hate speech law to apply.
Not really, no. When they encounter really hateful stuff, they have to analyze it using existing First Amendment precedents. And Carlson walks through the key cases, especially Brandenburg v. Ohio.
Right, Brandenburg. Yeah. That's the one with the really high bar, the imminent lawless action test.
That's the one. It means even speech advocating violence is protected unless it's intended to incite imminent unlawful action, and it's likely to do so.
Which is almost never the case with online speech, right? It's rarely truly imminent in that legal sense.
Precisely. Shouting hateful things to incite an immediate riot might beat the test. Posting awful stuff online, even calls for violence.
Yeah.
Legally, it's almost always seen as too abstract or too removed in time to be imminent.
It feels like the law is lagging way behind the technology there.
It often is.
Yeah.
And then there's REV City of St. Paul. That case basically said the government can't ban speech just because it expresses a hateful viewpoint. That's the viewpoint discrimination rule.
So you can't make a law against, say, racist ideas as ideas.
Correct. That's why directly legislating against hateful content itself is so incredibly difficult in the U.S. system.
Okay, so the legal protection is broad, but then the book pivots hard to the impact.
Yes, and this shift is so important. Moving from what the law allows to what the speech actually does to people in society.
This is where it gets really compelling, I think. She brings in the psychological research.
She does. She synthesizes a lot of studies showing documented harms, anxiety, depression, TTSD symptoms, and this concept she highlights called discursive exclusion.
Discursive exclusion. Okay, what does that mean in plain terms? It sounds a bit academic.
Think of it like this. Imagine you're trying to participate in a public meeting, like a town hall. But every time you speak up, someone starts shouting abuse at you, or maybe a group coordinates to harass you online afterwards.
Okay.
Eventually, you just stop speaking up. You withdraw. That act of silencing, that systematic pushing people out of the conversation, out of public life, that's discursive exclusion. It's not just her feelings. It's an act of subordination.
Wow. So the speech itself actually shrinks the marketplace of ideas instead of adding to it.
Exactly. It poisons the well. It undermines democracy by making public discourse less diverse, less representative, because certain groups are effectively silenced or intimidated into silence.
Okay, so we have the legal framework, the psychological harm, and then comes the accelerant, digital platforms.
The game changer, as Carlson puts it. The very architecture of these platforms, the speed, the massive scale, the anonymity or pseudonymity, it creates this almost perfect storm for hate to spread.
And she points specifically to the algorithms, right?
Oh, absolutely. Algorithmic amplification is central. These algorithms aren't neutral delivery systems. They're built to maximize engagement.
And extreme hateful stuff often gets a lot of engagement. Clicks, comments, shares.
Sadly, yes. So the algorithms often inadvertently promote it, pushing it into people's feeds, creating echo chambers, even those so-called radicalization pipelines. The tech itself makes the problem worse.
It's not just a neutral platform.
No way. And this creates huge problems for the platforms themselves trying to govern content. Their policies are often inconsistent. They operate across countless countries with different laws and cultures. They're trying to moderate billions of posts. It's a mess.
So how does this compare globally? You mentioned the U.S. is an outlier.
Right. The book contrasts the U.S. approach with what she calls the international model, looking at Europe, Canada, other places.
And how does that differ fundamentally?
It starts from a different philosophical place. While the U.S. puts this near-absolute premium on free expression, many other democracies explicitly balance expression with other values, like human dignity, equality, and social harmony.
Which means they can have laws restricting certain kinds of hate speech.
Yes. For instance, laws against promoting hatred towards protected groups, or laws like Germany's against Holocaust denial. Carlson makes it clear these often stem from different histories, different cultural contexts.
So you can't just copy-paste solutions from one place to another.
Definitely not. And this difference is crucial for you, the listener, to grasp. Then she brings this down to the micro level, looking at campus speech, which is like a petri dish for this whole debate.
Right. College campuses are always in the news about this.
And her argument there is interesting. Instead of just defaulting to punishment or suspension when incidents happen, she pushes institutions to see them as educational moments.
Meaning, use it to teach.
Yeah. Focus on dialogue, on helping students understand the real impact of words, the historical context, rather than just having rigid speech codes that might not hold up legally anyway. Make it a learning opportunity about navigating difference and harm.
Okay. And the book also looks ahead to future challenges.
It does. Chapter 6 touches on emerging tech. AI is a big one.
The double-edged sword.
Totally. AI can help detect hate speech, but if it's trained on biased data, it can also end up amplifying biases or making unfair judgments.
And what else?
Things like virtual reality environments. How do you moderate hate in immersive spaces? And deepfake technology, which opens up scary new possibilities for targeted harassment and disinformation. The tech is evolving so fast, and policy is struggling to keep pace.
Okay, that's a lot to cover. Let's try to boil down the key themes, the main takeaways Carlson really wants us to get.
Okay. Theme one, I'd say, is the true democratic harm. We have to get past thinking that more speech is always good for democracy. Carlson powerfully shows that hate speech undermines democracy by silencing voices. It actually reduces participation.
It subtracts from the conversation, doesn't add to it.
Precisely. Theme two, American exceptionalism and speech law. You really need to understand that the U.S. legal approach is unique globally. Its protections are incredibly broad.
Which explains why just banning stuff like they might do elsewhere isn't really an option here legally.
Exactly. Solutions have to fit the U.S. constitutional context. Theme three, grounding in evidence. Policy needs to be based on solid research, psychological, sociological, about the actual harm caused, not just gut feelings or ideology.
We need to ask, what does the data show about the impact?
Right. And theme four, maybe the most practical one, context matters. Terribly. There's no one-size-fits-all answer. How you respond has to depend on who's speaking, where, to whom, using what medium. Rigid rules just break down.
It demands a lot of nuance, then.
A ton of nuance.
The book also has some really quotable lines, right? Ideas that stick with you.
Yeah, she phrases things very effectively. One core idea is basically this. The question is not whether hate speech causes harm. Research has definitively established that it does, but rather how society should respond to that harm.
Okay, that shifts the whole debate. It's not if, it's how.
Exactly. It moves past denial. Another key idea focuses on tech. Digital platforms have not simply provided new venues. They have fundamentally altered the nature of public discourse.
So the medium isn't neutral. The technology itself is shaping the problem.
Right. The design matters immensely. And a third one, about finding balance. The goal should not be to eliminate all potentially offensive, but to develop more sophisticated tools for distinguishing between expression that deserves robust protection and expression that justifies intervention.
So reject the extremes, aim for smarter distinctions. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
That's the idea. It's a call for careful judgment, not blunt instruments.
Okay, let's make this really practical. For you listening, dealing with this stuff online or in your community, what are the real-life applications here?
Well, for individuals, Carlson strongly advocates for strategic counter-speech, but maybe not in the way people usually think about it.
Not just arguing with trolls.
Right, that's often pointless and just gives them attention. Strategic counter-speech is more about focusing energy on supporting the targets of abuse, providing factual alternative narratives, and crucially, not amplifying the hateful message by constantly engaging with it or sharing it, even to condemn it.
Don't feed the trolls, support the targets. Makes sense. What else?
Education is huge. Building community resilience through digital literacy. That means helping people learn to spot manipulation, understand how algorithms work and shape what they see, verify information. Basically, making people less susceptible to hate and disinformation in the first place.
Like building up our collective immune system to it.
That's a great analogy. And for platforms, she suggests moving beyond just leave up or take down. Thinking about intermediate steps like adding warning labels or reducing how much an algorithm shows borderline content using context to guide the response.
So more tools in the toolbox than just the delete button.
Exactly. Nuance again.
So thinking back on the whole book, what's one thing that really struck you or maybe surprised you?
For me, it was the depth of the argument about democratic harm, how systematically hate speech works to exclude people from public life. We often focus on the psychological harm to individuals, which is vital, but seeing it laid out as an attack on the democratic process itself was really powerful. And it underscores why the legal system, especially in the U.S., feels inadequate on its own. The First Amendment wasn't really designed with algorithmic amplification and discursive exclusion in mind.
Yeah, that really resonates. My big takeaway is this idea of collective responsibility. It's clear that the law alone won't fix this, platforms alone won't fix this, individuals alone won't fix this. It requires sustained effort from everyone. Us as citizens, educators, the tech companies, policymakers, there's no single magic bullet.
It's a whole ecosystem problem, needing an ecosystem solution.
And that brings us to that final provocative thought Carlson leaves us with, thinking about the future. If technology keeps changing, AI gets more sophisticated, VR becomes more mainstream, and the experience of harm changes again, what responsibility does a platform have for hate speech inside, say, a private, shared, virtual reality space? Where does the line get drawn then?
It really makes you think about how far behind our current rules might be and how quickly we need to adapt.
A really profound challenge for us all.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.